Well, first of all, thank you so much for joining us today, Harry, and everyone from South Dakota who continues to follow your work after you've been here for the South Dakota Festival of Books so many times, says hello. I know the librarians would want me to say that for sure. So thanks.
God bless the librarians.
That's right. We're talking today about Grace for Gus, and all of your books feel important to me. They all feel influential and fun and dynamic and all those things, but this one feels somehow more so to me than anything else.
Yeah.
Does it feel special? I mean, they're all special, so, but does it have a sense to you that this is, you know, a little bit something else?
Yeah, it definitely does. And you know, I think that the part of me feels as though with what's going on in the world today, we need a young heroine to you know, to put a different take on things. And yeah, the story came about. It was actually my son Alex made this short film, and when he was a sophomore in college in film school. Mm-hmm. And I saw it, and I thought it was really pretty sweet. And this high school girl sort of raises some money for the class guinea pig. And it was actually my wife who thought it would be a nice idea for a children's book. And I just switched it from, you know, high school to elementary school.
Hmm.
And I think when I first saw his film, it resonated with me that this young woman was really empowered to take it upon herself to make a difference, you know, in the life of a sort of innocent being.
Yeah. Something so
and,
small.
I think that empathy is something we need today. So yeah, it does definitely feels like it's, you know, very special to me. Yeah.
And she could have done this in multiple ways, you know, lemonade stands or a rummage sale, and everything she does is through the arts, essentially. Some sort of creative expression. What's the significance of that for you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was important to me to have her, you know, do something in the arts, mainly because I love the arts, but also because creativity, you know, it sort of takes a back seat sometimes to the technology that's going on in the, you know, in our lives. And I think sometimes we lose track of music and drawing and the things that we do with our hands, and performing and all those things. It's dance, yeah, and visual arts. You know, she draws caricatures, and of course she plays the violin, which is just great. And yeah, it was such art. It was such a huge. It was my savior growing up. So
yeah,
I hope it resonates with kids.
I guess now that you say that, she could have started a website and had a. She could have crowdsourced the guinea pig fund. But
yeah.
What fun would that be?
Yeah, it's not as it's not as much fun. There's nothing like seeing live music. Nothing, you know.
Yeah.
I still love when I'm in the subways and I see people performing. It's such a treat for me. And I make a point of actually, if I have any change or a dollar bill or, you know, a couple dollars in my pocket, I'll give it to them, because you can tell in most cases they really love doing it, you know.
Right.
And they're sharing something with you. It's an interactive thing, and yeah, I think it's great.
You illustrate for so many of the really luminaries of children's literature, and then you have those storytelling skills as well. How is the process different for you when it's your story start to finish? It's your book start to finish.
It's different because I have really a lot of control. And if I want the book to look a certain way, and in this case, I wanted the Grace for Gus to be all comics.
Mm.
And perhaps if I was illustrating another author's work or words, I may not have the opportunity to put it in comic panels. But generally, it's pretty similar. I mean, when I get manuscripts, whether it's from Katie Camillo or, you know, Sharon Creech or Doreen Cronin, they kind of let me do what I want. You know, I have to check in with them, and there are some, the editor plays a role there too, of course, but generally, it's pretty similar. It really is. I mean, the manuscript dictates what the look of the book is going to be.
Yeah.
But in this case, yeah, it was my Well, it was my son's story, so I did have to check in with him and show him that, you know, make sure it was true. But he's a real sport, so he was just happy to see it come to fruition. Yeah.
Is the short film available anywhere? Like what happened?
He did it as a sophomore, so he's not going to let anybody see that. He's got a reel of his own. That is, yeah.
Talk about
For a sophomore, it was nice. So.
Yeah, you grew up in a creative family, and you have lots of people on the family tree who have, you know, some sort of creative expression and making a living as an artist. You know, somewhere along the branches there. What is that? Just in your DNA, or is there something about how you interact with life and with each other that makes that possible?
Yeah, it's people always talk about. There's probably 10 or 12 of us in my immediate and extended family, all visual artists primarily. There were a couple musicians too, but my mom would say it was in the DNA, but I like to think that it was in the atmosphere more. It was more of an environmental thing. And I do believe that if you're willing to put the work in and you're inspired, inspiration is huge. I think most people can find a talent. You can find their talent, whatever that might be. I really believe that. I don't think you necessarily have to have some gene to be successful in the arts. I think if you work hard at it, and it's people say passion, but if you're curious and inspired, those are two big elements that come into play for me.
Where does that?
It's also an escape.
Oh yeah. Escape from just everything,
you
life.
You know, when you're growing up, when you're growing up in a suburb of upstate New York, you know, with three siblings, it can get a little, you know, dicey.
Yeah.
Let's just say, and the '70s were kind of a dicey time to grow up, for me at least. So, art was definitely an escape. It was a way to zone out of all the dysfunction that was going on. And I still think it's a great way to kind of lose yourself, move away from all that dysfunction. So I encourage kids to do that as a coping mechanism. Yeah.
A lesson for today as well.
Yeah. Oh my God. More important that today than it ever has been. Yeah.
You said
what's going on.
Inspiration is huge. What do you mean by that? Where does that come from for you?
Well, for me, a lot of times, inspiration now these days comes from reading. You know, I get a lot of ideas from books that I'm reading, but it's also curiosity. I think curiosities, they kind of go together. It could come from a landscape. It could come from looking at a tree. You know, oftentimes I'll be out walking with my dog and, and some landscape will strike me. Or if I'm reading a P.G. Wodehouse book and there's a line or something in there that maybe there's a word that is somewhat antiquated but I think is very funny, I'll try to work that into a caption for a New Yorker cartoon or something. And that happens a lot. That's part of my creative process, especially when it comes to cartooning these days, is reading, you know, just reading different books. I'm reading John Updike right now, and I'm sure there's going to be John Updike cartoon coming out pretty soon. So, yeah, I think inspiration is huge. Yeah.
So how do you do that? Because in a cartoon, you need it to be. Does it matter if it's timely or relevant? Or, I mean, do you have to think like this is what needs to be said right now as a cartoonist, or do you just get to follow your own desires wherever they happen to lead?
Yeah, I pretty much follow my own my instincts and don't think too much about how a certain cartoon or even a book is relevant to what's going on. I think that stuff just comes into play in an unconscious way. I think it's important, but I don't think about it.
Yeah.
At least not in the very early stages. It's not on my radar. I'm just thinking what makes me laugh, what is funny to me. And it could come from reading. It could also come in conversation with somebody. Oftentimes, someone will say something, and there'll just be a piece of a sentence that they say that I just find very funny, or there's some little bit of wit. Yeah. I call them cartoon seeds. and I'll have to get out my pen and like write down whatever words they just said, or, you know, and or log it into my phone for later. But yeah, my brain is just wired now to think in terms of cartoons. I can't help it. I'm sure there'll be a radio interview cartoon that's in the pipe, you know.
Awesome. I'm going to look for it.
Yeah.
So Grace for Gus, I want, one of the things, I was a children's book buyer for a while, and one of the things that was always difficult to convince people is, how am I going to share this book with my child? How am I going to read a book to my child that is almost wordless? And this is something I did with my child growing up very naturally. So sometimes I had a hard time articulating that to parents. So what do you tell people about how an adult can, you know, can interact with this book with a child together? How can it be part of their connection?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's important, because when you're reading comics, you're reading the panels visually.
Right.
So if you think about reading words, it's a different lobe of your brain. I'm pretty sure about that, that is being activated. And when you're seeing things going on in a panel, I mean, some panels could have more going on. In Grace for Gus, there are some narratives going on in the background that are really fun to look for and to find. You know, you can go back in multiple readings and sort of look for hidden sight gags, which are, there are quite a few in that book, probably more so in that book than any other book that I've done. But yeah, it's a different type of reading, and it requires a different type of sort of deciphering. And I think it's really important, because we learn to read things first visually. Mm. Words aren't our first go-to. It's we see things and we watch things and see how things unfold. And it's very much the same. You're not reading words. For me, you know, I've always loved comics that didn't have words in them. I was intimidated by words.
Yeah.
So I think as a vehicle for young people who are intimidated by words, or honestly just bored by words on white paper, this is a window into that. It's a window into that. So I went from looking at comics that were primarily wordless as a young person, and then I moved into words on paper, and then or illustrated books that had both words and pictures. But I think there's quite a bit in this book visually, just to take time to read visually.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, a physical book is so important too for something like this. You flip back and you look for things, you know, four pages earlier or something. Oh, there's the cat. Well, wait, I lost track of the cat. Now I have to go back and look and see. So you really need it to be a book, not on a device too. Although I'm sure it looks beautiful, you know, on a screen. You really need, I think, that physical book in your
lap.
You
do. Yeah. I believe that too. I'm a huge, you know, there was a time when I actually was thinking, oh, you know, do I need to read books? Do I need to have the physical book? It's all content, you know, I can get it on device. But I think you're right. Now I love going back and flipping through. It just, there's something key in just holding a book.
Yeah.
You know, flipping the pages, the physical quality of a book in your hand is just a wonderful thing. And yeah, it's true. You can flip back and there is a cat in the book, and the cat is doing, you can see the cat doing different things on many pages. You know, the cat, whether it's a boy or girl, I didn't really think about that when I did the book. So, but yeah, she's out there at night, and that there's a spread there where it's a cityscape and the cat is there. You can see the cat up on the top of the building looking out at another cat on a fire escape. So, and those are things for me when I'm working on the book, it's really fun. It's just fun to add those little narratives in there.
And that particular spread reminded me of one of your New Yorker cartoons or cover art.
Yeah.
You know, one of your covers. Yeah. New York.
Yeah. Well, the New York is the, you know, I was there for a while. I lived in Philadelphia for many years, but, you know, people say, well, how do you work for the New Yorker if you don't live in New York? And I just think, man, once you live in the city, you take that with you. You'll never forget that experience. And you, as a visual artist, you kind of take mental photographs of everything. So you know what cornices look like on buildings. You know what you know, street lights look like and all that stuff, even mailboxes and things that you see in city streets and so on. You carry it with you and you never forget it. And the act of drawing is if you draw all the time, which I do every day, you know, not so much for work, but just in my journal, you log that stuff in, and you just, the more you draw it, the more it becomes just second nature. It's so easy. You just, you know, you can make that stuff out without going to Google search and looking at anything.
At this point, is there anything that you think, I don't know if I can draw that? I mean, do you doubt yourself before you start ever anymore?
Yeah, there are. I mean, not a lot, but if you can, you know, I had a teacher always said, you know, she said to me, you have to see it in your mind first. And I always thought that was really strong advice. And I think that's true. If you can conceptualize it and understand it in your mind, usually I can draw it. Now, that said, I can't draw horses. I just can't. I have a really hard time drawing horses. I can draw cars. I can draw people doing all sorts of things. I just was working on a cartoon just a few minutes ago where it was like there was a boxer who was, you know, doing figure skating, doing a full twist. And I had to, you know, I had to really, it was hard. I was like, this is not easy. So, and there's a lot of racing going on, but basically the more you draw, the better you get. It's just the way it is.
How do you
just keep getting better?
Do you save those journals? Do you tear pages out? Like what's your relationship to your notebooks?
Oh, I would say I never tear pages out of my notebook these days. I have journals. I journal every morning and every night, usually for 3 hours in the morning and then not so much at night because I'm kind of tired. But, my routine every morning is to wake up and read the New York Review of Books. I'll read whatever novel I'm working on, and then I'll draw and journal for sometimes 4 hours up until like noon. But it's work, you know. It's like
right.
I'm basically mining for ideas. I'm mining for cartoon ideas in that process. But no, I don't really throw anything out in my journal because it's a moleskin, so I don't.
Right.
Nah. Those days, no one's going to see my journals anyway. So those are my son will see them someday when I'm dead.
But you know, you couldn't have started out that way. I mean, you wouldn't have had the time before you really were established enough to. You know, to make a living. How did you originally start creating the kind of life that you wanted to live while, you know?
A lot of mistakes, a lot of ripping out pages art was always there. So I was always drawing. I was always making pictures, even when I was a waiter in Philadelphia. You know, I was a waiter and a busboy and a dishwasher. Many years in the restaurant business while I was drawing. Many mistakes. One of the things that I do, I go to schools all over the country, in fact, all over the world. I've been to Moscow and Dubai and Singapore, and I talk to kids about mistakes, and I tell them, you know, mistakes are actually really good. You don't want to sort of get discouraged from your mistakes. You can turn that around and think to yourself, well, this mistake is actually, it's helping me. You know, it's a way I'm understanding what not to do next time. And you would have never figured that out had you not made that kind of mistake. There should be another name for it, but we should change the name mistake to something else.
And there's another seed for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good idea for a kid's book right there.
Exactly. So I'm wondering that with the time, you know, you're working in a restaurant industry, you come home, you're tired. Were you drawing back then for hours a day, too?
I was drawing when I was, not so much when I was a waiter, but I also bartended, and I would draw a lot. Like when you're in the restaurant business, you're waiting for people to come in. Mm-hmm. So you get there at 3, you do your side work, you stock the bar, you get your ice, and then you just sit and wait for customers to come in. And I would just take these sheets of paper that they used as placemats for the tables and my ballpoint pen, and I would just write and draw. You know, sometimes I would do caricatures of the other waiters on the 86 board in the kitchen. which is, you know, where you write down the specials and what we're running out of. And I would do caricatures of all these Italian guys. Man, they loved it. So much fun. I got fired like 3 times, and then they hired me back because they missed my drawings. Like, so ridiculous. And you, I was a goofball.
But you also really pursued, you know, an education in arts. Was it because of the family that you came from that you received support for that, or did that feel like a risk to you to invest in, you know, a school?
Yeah, that's a great question. It never felt like a risk. I never considered, you know, never thought about failure. I never thought about making a living when it came to art. I just didn't. It wasn't on my radar. I just thought I can always get a job, you know, waiting tables. I you know, it's funny. I never thought about it. I never considered money. It never entered in the equation at all, or success for that matter. Of course, you want to be successful. You know, you want to start illustrating. And I did magazine work for a while, and I did a lot of book covers early on.
Right.
But I don't know. I really don't know. I knew I was pretty good, you know, having parents that are both artists. You know, I think 50% of my studio education was superfluous because I learned all that stuff from my dad.
Yeah.
But, you know, the business end of it, you know, how do you get along with people? How do you communicate with art directors and editors? How do you get the right price for your work? All that stuff, you learn by mistakes, you know. Hmm. You know. Yeah.
You illustrated a book by Sharon Creech. It's one of my favorite of all time, called Fine School. and this, you know, so I have expressed gratitude to you before when you've been in South Dakota for this book and your other work. But one of the moments, I don't know if I've ever told you about, is really as a parent, my daughter reading this by herself, you know, I had read it aloud to her, and Sharon Creech is such a writer. It's just delicious to read.
Yeah.
But your illustrations are like in Grace for Gus, there's so much happening in the background that my daughter would spend hours reading without me. This story that was going on, you know, behind the story. And I remember looking at it thinking, like, she's learning how to read, and she's learning, endurance is not the right word, but I mean, she's sitting for such a long period of time reading and following a story that I knew she was, like, learning how to read novels in some ways.
Yeah.
And preparing herself for the rigors of what she's reading now as a high school student through the work that you had put in that book. She knew it mattered, and she knew it was worth the time. And that's
the
first book I ever saw her do that with, to that, you know, extent. She was pretty little. I mean, she wasn't even in school yet.
Wow. That's great to hear. Yeah, that's huge. I love to hear that.
And this one has so much happening that
it does.
People are going to be telling each other, did you see Patti Smith? Did you notice, you know, Vincent van Gogh? Did you see, you know, the magazine called The Old Yorker that someone's reading on the subway?
There's so many in there. Yeah.
You must have had
some in there. What's that?
You must have had so much fun doing that.
Yeah.
But you also have to know that some of them people aren't going to see. There's going to be things that just you saw. You're going to miss some.
There's some in there that are just for me, in fact.
Yeah.
Well, there's something else about, like, when a parent is reading to a child, and I know this to be true because it happened with me and my son, but when I would laugh at a children's book, and my son would see me laughing at the book that I was reading for him, that was really powerful. You know, when a child sees a parent engaged, you know, on that level, because when you laugh, you're really emoting quite a bit. You can't fake that, in other words. Sometimes maybe parents will read to their kids, and they're not really into it. They have to cook dinner and, you know, do things. But I think it's key. And I'm very cognizant of that when I do the book. I'm thinking, I know parents will get a kick out of this as they're reading it, you know, reading it to their child or sharing it with their child. Yeah, that's really important to me, that experience that they share that together.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think that what happened, you know, with Jane, it's like they take that journey separately, you know, which is what you want your kid to do.
Hmm.
Yeah.
3-starred reviews already, Publishers Weekly, The Horn Book, Kirkus. I'm waiting for the Caldecott sticker someday on this one myself. I don't know if that's what you
I am too.
You think about
it. The reviews. I'm glad people and the critics are digging it, because I'm very proud of it. You know, I really am. I have to say, I'm very happy with the way it came out. She's a heroine for our time.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Some of the promotional copy is "The Secret Lives Creative People Make for Themselves," and whoever wrote that, I like that too.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. Do you have a secret life that you've made for yourself as a creative person?
Well, I don't know if it's so much of a secret, but my secret life now, my life moving forward, is to I started this residency in Cornish, New Hampshire, for young cartoonists, and we offer, it's kind of like my little Guggenheim Fellowship for young cartoonists, and we do it every year now, and they come to and live on the property for a month every year. So my secret life moving forward is to help young people find their path and in making graphic novels. That's really what I'm looking forward to doing more of.
Harry Bliss, the book is Grace for Gus. Thank you so much for your time and for this beautiful, beautiful book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.